Tim, can you hear us down there?
Yeah, I sure can, guys. Those are some great resolutions.
Well, buddy, I know you're going to have a good year. You already stole my girlfriend. Just kidding. What's your New Year's resolution?
Well, I think for 2018, I'm just going to let the world fall apart like it seems to be doing. You know, racism and class warfare are tearing us apart. And I don't really see a way out of it, so more than likely, I'll just head off to my bunker and hope that my food supply lasts.
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding, guys.
Oh.
I'd like to lose about 10 pounds and reach out to old friends I haven't seen and make some new connections, too.
We thought we lost you there, buddy.
All right, let's start the show!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. Live from unincorporated Clark County, Nevada, I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, live in Austin, Texas. You know what? You may be at CES, Tom, but I'm at the BES, the Brushwood Electronics Shenanigans.
I might prefer to be there than here. That sounds pretty fun. I'm just saying.
Well, and that was from a bit of the Amazon Rose Bowl Parade. Is that what it is, Bryce?
Yeah, the Rose Parade coverage.
Rose Parade. That's what it is.
Yeah. My wife and I watch the Rose Parade every year. We usually watch it on KTLA since we moved to Los Angeles, which has the independent announcers, Bob Eubanks, I think, is one of them, and I can't remember the other person's name, and they did it forever and ever and ever. And then, like, a couple years ago, they finally retired, and we were so pleased to find this Amazon coverage that mocks them but sort of fills that gap, because we watched it sort of, you know, ironically, and this was so well done. Did you watch it?
I only saw bits and pieces, but every little bit I saw made me very happy. Now, did they stream it live, or was it delayed, or
they did it. Yeah, they did it live the first time through, and then and I think we caught it like part way, and then they just kept repeating it after that.
Got it. Brilliant move on their part. What a great way to take an institution and add a little bit of detached irony to get everybody super stoked to watch it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Roberto Villegas is going to be joining us in a little bit. He's going to be jumping in as soon as he can, but let's kick it off with our primary target. So FX Network CEO John Landgraf was speaking to the TV critics Friday. A bunch of these TV critics meetings are happening in Los Angeles, and said, quote, "To be honest, as incredible as television's become, it sometimes feels to me like a sideshow in what has become a daily three-ring media circus," basically saying, yeah, we have the best television we've ever made, but most people are just on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram yelling at each other. And it just feels like we're sort of a sideshow to that. Total number of cable, broadcast, and stream series hit an estimated high of 487 in 2017. That's up 7%. 117 of those shows were from streamers like Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu. That number rose 30% over the previous year. So definitely the number is showing we're getting more television than ever. I think generally we'd agree that we're getting higher quality, at least at the top end, than ever. But Brian, what do you think of his sideshow comment?
You know what? And I don't even care necessarily if it's just higher quality at the top end, because not only that, we're branching into these very specific niches. So if you are a person who loves cats addicted to meth and the interventions they have, there's finally a show for you, I assume. And therefore, de facto, it is the best show of that variety that has ever been. So it's like, yeah, there's always going to be some pocket of it that people deeply love. But I got to tell you, it sounds to me like a novelist grousing about newspapers. You know, it's like, it used to be books were it, and now you've got these daily rags, morning and evening editions, cuckoo shenanigans. How's my novel supposed to stand out from the crowd in this case?
That's so funny. Like, I'm not sure if the history of newspapers and novels, like, accurately measure up, but I love this idea of, like, well, sure, we have the Bronte sisters and Dickens, some of the best novels English languages have ever written, but at the same time, everyone's reading this yellow journalism.
Exactly.
And not paying any attention.
Well, and it's just an artifact of the time. It does just have a little bit of Andy Rooney feel to this whole thing, right? This is just old people grousing about how things are different now.
I mean, I guess if I had to try to take another take on Landgraf, it might be that he's saying, hey, folks, we're making some really great stuff. Why are y'all bitching at each other out there? Maybe settle down.
Well, and he's not wrong. And that's the other thing, is it's only going to get more chaotic and there's only going to be more attention headline grabbing bits. There's going to be only more apps that are designed to fill in the 30-second gap between, the bottom of the escalator and the top of the escalator. And the question is whether or not you think that's a bad thing or an inherently bad thing or not. Yeah. I'll tell you what, this is my new favorite segment. Answer a question that you don't know what it is, featuring our guest, Roberto Villegas.
Well, you know, actually, to be honest, I did read the article, so I kind of know a little
busted.
Bit about it.
Busted!
I don't know where to lead into the article, so only half busted.
Well, so is this just an old-timer grousing that things aren't the way they used to be? Is it a bad direction that we're heading to? Or let's say everything he says is right, and I would make the case, good, there should be a three. Because the sideshow, I mean, you're talking to somebody who makes a living doing a sideshow.
Right.
So it's like, I'm fond of the sideshow. Sideshow loses nothing by having a three-ring circus erupt around it.
I guess the question is, can you monetize a sideshow? That's kind of where I sort of viewed a lot of things. Because ultimately, when you talk to like your actual network executives and stuff like that, it's all about, can you make money on something? And can you sell advertisers on something? And it's easy to sell an advertiser on, here's a program, here's a demo, here's what's going to come. The sideshow is like, could be anybody, could be, you know, this whole mixture of stuff. It's like, well, how do you monetize a sideshow? And I guess that's sort of what I kind of view it as, that idea, maybe.
Yeah, I guess I'm preemptively responding to all that because if I care about the show, I almost always buy it, even though I could watch it for free some cable.
Right, but, you know.
But that is different than selling ads on it.
Exactly.
Sure.
Because if you think of how programming's done now. Mm-hmm. Even your YouTube, even your sort of, you know, internet stuff now, it is about how do you monetize it. That's where we're getting in this sort of big issue with YouTube, is like, because that was what YouTube Red was supposed to solve, was the idea of like, well, we're having this program that we can't really sell as brand safe and all the sort of things. So let's put this Red in so we can get some revenue on this, you know, wild content that we can't sell to advertisers. And now we're kind of seeing that, well, maybe that's not quite there yet. Maybe the money's not there. And so I have a feeling that that's the fear, because as we start moving more and more into this, well, I'll just buy the content, which is cool and great. It's like, well, you're still making a lot of your money in ads. You know, people still expect YouTube to be free. And that's really what the problem is. That's sort of why I was like, okay, I can see where you'd want, why the sideshow would be this like, well, we can make a content. Because like, how do you advertise it? How do you make money off this?
Interesting.
That's my take.
I looked at it, and I don't know whether he was doing it inadvertently or not, but it seems like he hit the nail on the head of, it is a different landscape. It's not, we have books, movies, TV shows, and newspapers and radio. You have the internet, which I think the music industry felt it first, and newspapers maybe second, but everybody's feeling it. Like, it doesn't matter how high quality your thing is, there are just more things for people to choose from. So whether people are playing video games or they're reading Facebook, there are more demands on their entertainment time. And in a way, that's great, because it's forcing, in this case, television providers to make the best television that has ever been made in order to just, you know, get some attention from people.
Well, even now, like, and I was thinking about this, especially with the Golden Globes and everything else, the line between what we define as television is blurring very, very rapidly, in that, you know, you have not just simply like TV is, you know, we assume it's just what's on, you know, on broadcast, but then there's Hulu, there's Netflix, and there's even all the other, you know, stations that are coming in, all this sort of side content. So I can see where, you know, you have a lot more demand on your entertainment from other things, but you have a lot more choices too. And that's, you know, again, it's all about how do you get more viewers? It's how you get more people that, you know, have a certain take. And more importantly, you know, that's how you sell to advertisers. That's kind of where a Fox comes from, is like, well, a lot of our money comes from this. How do we make sure we still get that money? And, you know, Well, in 2019, 2020 type thing.
Do we know, and it sounds like he's talking in general about the difficulties in capturing attention these days, because attention and money are in some effect one and the same. I don't want to speculate without any numbers about how much money they have available in all those spots, but I think he's speaking just to the attention.
Yeah, I don't think he's talking about like FX networks. They ain't making money. I mean, Disney just bought them up. They're gonna be fine.
Oh, yeah.
I think it is more. It may even be just as much about I'm frustrated every time I look at Twitter, just like everybody else. Like I don't know. I tell you what, though, the solution to money for this show, Brian, is just to ask people to give it to us.
Yeah, you know what? Dear FX, here's a letter. It's called, why don't you use Patreon? Go to patreon.com/cordkillers, and you can see what a real media mogul looks like. Of course, Patreon is how you guys keep us loud, live, and independent. Coming up on 4 years now? Over 4 years?
Yeah.
Almost 4 years.
Over 4 years.
4 years. Wow, 200 episodes. You guys have changed our lives. For the better, we continue to try to grow, thrive, and survive, and it's all because of you guys.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Try us out if you haven't already at patreon.com/cordkillers, and now we'll tell you how to watch in exchange. With your eyes. All right, next segment. No.
and on next one.
There are some Cord Killer related items coming out at CES. We'll probably wait to see how it all shakes out to talk about most of them next week. But one that caught my eye right before the show today, Channel Master has a new flat antenna called the Smartenna Plus. It's amplified, so you plug it in and that helps it pull in more signals. It's an indoor TV antenna. You just put it up on the wall, super simple. And the thing that separates it is it's got an internal processor that will analyze your signal reception. It emulates 7 different reception patterns. So the way they say it is it acts like 7 different antennas, but I think it's just like emulating where the amplification goes and how it configures its internal antenna. And then it chooses the one that is best for you. And if you want to do a rescan, if you move it, there's a button you just press at the bottom to do the scanning. Pre-orders are available now. It's going to cost you $89, and you can buy it for pre-order at the Channel Master online store.
Okay. So $89, what's the per month fee, Tom?
Yeah, exactly. This is over the air, right? You get anything you get for free after that.
That's the amazing. We've talked about this before, but the fact that millennials think this is a scam or a hack or some kind of tricky, sneaky thing to just get channels for free.
I'd really be curious how well it does in reception. Like, even though I know it emulates stuff and I can kind of, you know, grep the tech in my head, I'm really, really curious how effective that is. Like, because especially with antennas, it's all about, you know, pickup patterns, things like that. I really want to see that in action, because that sounds cool for $89, but I want to know, is it going to actually work?
Yeah,
but
the key for me will be with my flat antenna, I can get 2 channels if I turn it that way and a bunch more channels if I turn it this way, right? And they're at a perpendicular angle. Can this thing, without me having to put it at a perpendicular angle,
give me all
of those?
In other words, you got to prove to me that this can, if I put it wherever, you know, roughly wherever in my house or my apartment, it's going to pick up roughly the same in each section. Like, that would be good enough for me, but just because, like you say, like, oh, we could, you know, we can do the best antenna. Like, we got to prove this one now.
Well, I mean,
they
to
just
be honest,
announced a product. They didn't make any claims.
Exactly.
To be honest, the thing that encourages me the most is there's a big difference between the $17, $20, $30 antennas that you get and charging $89 for an antenna.
No, that's why.
The mere fact that they're charging more than double the going rate for a similar style of antenna is a pretty good indicator that they're confident that, you know, if you have 2 channels, you'll be able to get those other 3
hopefully,
or whatever.
Again, yeah. You know,
I mean, Channel Master's got a good reputation,
sure.
So I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. And you do have to have a little pricier if you're putting a processor in there.
No. That's why everything makes sense with the price. If it's going to cost me, you know, near $100, like, well, let's hope this works.
What Roberto's saying is we can't wait to see a few outlets test this.
Exactly.
How it actually works. TiVo is launching a streaming service marketed at TV service providers. So not only your Comcast of the world, but potentially like your PlayStation Views of the world. It's called the Next Gen platform, I should say. It would offer cloud DVR access to streaming services like Netflix and Hulu. Now, I just said something's going to make you think it does something that doesn't. It doesn't let you DVR Netflix. It adds cloud service DVR plus streaming services like Netflix and Hulu all in one interface. A cable TV service, for instance, could use it to provide linear over-the-top, so the normal slate of channels, on-demand and DVR platforms, and you don't have to have a TiVo box to use it. The service can run on Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Android TV, as well as some smart TVs, cable boxes, and mobile devices. So it's interesting. I mean, TiVo's going to run it on their own box as well. It's going to be on the Bolt, but they are making a play to become a service provider for cable television, not just a box seller.
So this is, man, this is so curious. So it's like they're not even marketing this to Joes like you and me to add to one of our services. They're going to Spectrum, to Comcast, and so on.
Hasn't that always been TiVo's dream to sort of be the OS for...
It's certainly been this consumer's dream, is that they would gut the back end of every crappy cable box out there and replace it with TiVo's beautiful, elegant interfaces.
I mean, it's not just their dream. It's the way they've made most of their money up till now is being one of the OSs. But they've never been able to be the only OS. And so this is them saying, well, what if we provide the cloud service? And that's something that, especially for smaller companies, you know, I'm sure Comcast is not going to do this. PlayStation View is not going to do this.
Yeah, but like a Bright House Communications or a Grande Communications. Yeah.
You get cloud DVR service without having to spend all the money to do the infrastructure. So.
And won't it be great if it's as good as a lot of TiVo's other products? All of a sudden, you know, the smaller players, by virtue of signing up, number one, by using them for the cloud DVR services, it keeps TiVo in the money loop so that they're selling their product as a service. And then number two, all of a sudden, these smaller guys get to leapfrog the quality experience that it's going to take, you know, Comcast and Xfinity or whatever, a long time to develop and test and then roll out stuff. Whereas these guys will just be able to, you know, constantly have it be upgrading with one of the top tier providers of those services.
This is not
and instead of having to write out cable boxes, just sell people Fire TVs.
Yeah. Sorry.
What, no, I was going to say, like, this is like not uncommon for like other industries to have like other dev teams handle their applications. Like happens a lot in the banking sphere.
Yeah.
You know, circle where it's like a company exists to make your banking apps for credit unions that are just kind of small and micro. That's why you have like Touch ID on some of these sort of things. I'm excited just to see like TiVo doing that because it's they make a good product. They make a really good user interface. That. And I know we have, I think there's a story ahead of time where, especially if they start having those integrated like Hulu and Netflix's and even like your CBS All Access kind of in a box where you just don't have to, you know, you may not have to pay for a license for something. If that makes any sense.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about what to watch with all this stuff in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Animaniacs is coming back with a series on Hulu. Won't be for a couple of years, 2020. Steven Spielberg will executive produce alongside Warner Brothers Animation President Sam Register, Amblin Television co-president Justin Falvey, and Daryl Frank. Hulu also is getting the library rights. You can already see those. Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, Pinky Elmira and the Brain, and the complete Tiny Toon Adventures collection available on Hulu now.
No word yet on whether or not they will continue to have baloney in their slacks.
Man.
I would assume so.
Times change, Tom.
I don't know.
That might have been the height of cutting-edge comedy in the early 90s.
Can you ever stop being totally insane-y, though, Brian?
Pinky and the Brainy.
How much have you guys watched of Animaniacs?
A fair amount.
Okay. Because I didn't realize it happened until I flipped on Hulu and saw, oh, Animaniacs is here. That's interesting. And over the weekend, I think I watched, once again, the best episode, or the best... episode portion of Pinky and the Brain, which is Yes Always.
Oh no, I guess I haven't seen that
yes,
one.
Always,
or I don't remember it.
Basically, it is a family version verbatim of the Orson Welles Frozen Pea commercial with Brain doing the voice, because like I forget the voice actor does Brain, but it's basically a impression of Orson Welles in the grand scheme of things. You know, the whole Frozen Pea is like,
man, dude, sounds like you're saying a lot of words.
Oh, no,
I'm sure they mean something.
It's an old story.
The one where he goes to the commercial and he's drunk.
Right. He's like,
but he's saying Frozen Peas.
That's the commercial.
That's what they do in the Animaniacs.
Got it. All right. Yeah. All right. Now I'm with you. Yeah. Hey, there we go. See.
Hey, you know, something else that's really old. David Letterman, and he's back on Netflix with a show called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, premiering January 12th with his first guest.
Yeah,
you
dude.
Need no introduction. Barack Obama.
Well, why'd you introduce him then?
I didn't introduce him. I just said his name.
Yeah, man. I'm really excited about this. David Letterman, I saw him guest on the Norm Macdonald podcast talking about his heart surgery. And I forgot how much I missed David Letterman and how he's still got it. And I don't care if he looks like Santa Claus now. That's okay by me, man. It's great. I'm excited.
I'm excited just because I know Dave Letterman has enough contacts that he can get like some top tier guests. Like if you're opening up with a former president, that's amazing.
Yeah, some of the other ones were Malala and
Jay-Z, George Clooney, Tina Fey, and Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Oh, the Howard Stern one, that would be really good.
I'll be honest, man. Two things. I grew up idolizing David Letterman. I would record late night on video cassette. So I could make sure that I didn't miss it. And I still have a couple of VHS tapes of late night. I love that he is going to be able to come back and just do what he wants, because that was always his thing, was like pushing the envelope and trying new things. And the other thing I absolutely adore in the scope of the David Letterman story is that one of his earliest weaknesses was interviewing guests. That was the thing he was slammed about, is he was a horrible interviewer. And to say in semi-retirement, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to effing interview guests, and I'm going to show just how goddamn awesome I got at it.
And he's
over
going
my career.
To be great, because he certainly got so good. Like think about what was that moment? Joaquin Phoenix was pretending to be melting down on the show, and he kept that thing afloat even though Joaquin was not there. He's a great interviewer, and I love the fact that it looks like it's just going to be him on a stage, Charlie Rose style. Yeah. Although hopefully not all the aspects of Charlie Rose from what we see in the headlines. No, I'm very excited about this.
Well, late night's never been like the interview like friendly format. It's always like sound bites and quick. So I'd be really curious what Letterman can do when it's just him one-on-one in a deep interview with somebody.
Yeah.
A few other things here. Netflix's Series of Unfortunate Events season 2 is scheduled to come back March 30th. So I don't know if you all are fans, but keep an eye out for that. Netflix's She's Gotta Have It from Spike Lee has been renewed for an 8-episode second season. I haven't got a chance to see season 1. I don't know if y'all have.
Yeah, I have not either, and I feel like a bad
person. It's on my watch list now, because I didn't even realize Spike Lee did something for Netflix, and that was like, oh, Spike Lee did something for Netflix.
HBO confirmed the final season of Game of Thrones will not come back this year. It will air in 2019.
Super okay with that. As long as it's good. Yeah.
And it's 6 episodes. So remember, it got smaller. It was 7 episodes last time.
I can almost guarantee you they're going to be like 6 90-minute to 2-hour episodes. It's going to be amazing.
They've as much as said that. And Hulu announced it will do a second season of Runaways. However, ABC says its Marvel series Inhumans, quote, didn't perform for us at the level that we would have wanted. They haven't canceled it yet, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, so we were singing the praises of Runaways on the Weird Things podcast shortly before this. I know that I've not seen the Runaways, but my comparison is always like, how's it compared to Legion? And for their money, I think Bryce and Andrew both felt like Runaways might be better for what it's trying to do. Makes me interested. There was some chatter in the Diamond Club TV chat about how is Disney going to ruin Legion by taking over FX? And I got to tell you, No way. Dude, Disney.
Anytime a new corporation takes over something else, they ruin it. Tom Merritt,
you know that Disney is an exceptional steward of those properties, and they're very good at letting.
Nope. When things change, they always get ruined.
You're killing me.
Look, it's not like Disney likes making money.
Yeah, right? I think they're going to be great. You know, to be honest, if anything, I think we could look forward to a future season of Legion in which maybe the special effects budget just gets a little bit of a goose.
A little bit of
well-needed infusion of cash.
If I told you Fox Sports was taking over FX and you didn't already know that they ran it because it's part of the same company right now, would you be like, oh, great, Fox, the people who would do Fox Sports are going to do FX. It's the same company. It's going to be the same CEO. It's going to be the guy we talked about earlier, Langdorf. It's going to be this, you know, as long as they don't shut it down or lay everyone off, which there's no indication that they would do that.
Yep.
It shouldn't change at all. Let's talk about what we've been watching. Let's start with you, Roberto. What's been on your screens?
Oh, the usual. It's Ruby Volume 5. It's almost finishing up there on the Rooster Teeth channel. A whole bunch of other stuff. But actually, last night I finished up on Netflix Erased, finally. Erased is basically this... it's a manga adaptation, live action. Like, I think we talked about the last time I was on that Netflix started going more into international broadcasting and sort of international content. And I guess they've been licensing and like getting a lot of rights to some stuff in Japan and just making some really amazing thing. But the quick gist of it is this main character sort of has this power he calls revival, where it sort of flashes back, you know, roughly like 5 or 15 minutes, but then somehow flashes back to his childhood in 1988 and has to sort of solve this mystery to save his mother. I'm just kind of condensing it really bad, but it's really compelling. Like, it has all the things I love: time travel, alternate realities, all that kind of fun jazz. So it was pretty good for sure.
Yeah, right. Excellent. On.
I saw you watched the Dave Chappelle special on Netflix as well. I've only seen the first one. I think it's called Equanimity.
They're
where he's doing his
both
stand-up, but
very
it was really good.
I think I like the second one better, which is where it's basically him in a very intimate setting, like it's definitely like a bar type, you know, stand-up. But they're both like the first two specials of Dave Chappelle were great. You know, the Netflix there. Back to Forest, everything good. This one is like, wow. It feels like if he were never to do stand-up again, which it sounds like he's not, just based on these specials, again, you never know. It's entertainment. Anyone can leave. Anyone can come back. But if this were the last two specials he had, I would be happy with that.
Wow.
Yeah, right on. They're really good. It is Dave Chappelle, so understand that. And there are a lot of off-color jokes, but that's kind of what Dave does, and you almost have to kind of take that sometimes. But yeah, I'd say worth a watch for sure, especially if you're a Dave Chappelle fan.
Right on.
Brian, what about you?
Started the Black Mirror. I've only watched the first of the four new ones. There were four new ones, right?
I think it's six.
Six? Oh, see, I must be thinking of season four. But I watched USS Callister. Of course, watched Deadwood as we were continuing to do. I did get to watch Shape of Water, which I enjoyed quite a bit.
What did you think of it?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in spoilers.
Okay, because I saw it recently, too.
And then I finally got around to finishing American Vandal. And you were right. You were right, Bryce. It's great all the way through the end. A lot of depth and sincerity and, you know, real high school drama in a very believable context in the way they're doing it. You know, even kind of a tragic ending to the way the whole story ends without being too spoilery. Liked it a lot. Watch American Vandal.
I myself also watched Deadwood for the show. Watched Black Mirror all six episodes. So we're gonna save the spoiler and time on that until Brian's watched a couple of more. If you're looking forward to that, we will get to it. I also finished my years long sort of informal, every once in a while watching Star Trek Voyager from start to finish, and it was really, I don't know, it was kind of emotional to finish it again. And realize, and this is just personal, that it premiered at a time in my life when I didn't know what to do. I was working at a bookstore in Austin. I'd just broken up with my girlfriend. I didn't know where I was going. And as I was watching that finale, I remembered that I watched that finale with my current wife in the first place that we lived in together. And it's sort of like, was the beginning of my current life. Like, Voyager just bridged that whole period. And I realized, oh, that's why I'm rewatching this. It's not just that I like these stories, which I do, and I think it's a good series. And that's something that, you know, I didn't realize that something like Netflix gives you is that chance to just sort of go back and kind of re-experience your past. Like smells bring back memories. These shows were bringing back memories as I watched them all. Also, we started watching Poldark, which is on PBS here in the United States. It's a period drama. It has Aidan Turner. He was the guy who was in The Hobbit. He was one of the Hobbits. And he's been in a bunch of other stuff as well. He plays the main character. It's okay. It's no Victoria. It's no The Crown. But it sort of was scratching that same itch. If you're looking for a decent period drama, you might want to check that out.
Right on.
All right. Bryce, what have you been on the lookout for?
This on the lookout this week was a super weird experience because I saw the trailer for it on YouTube on January 1st. with a buddy. We were just looking through YouTube and like, hey, we'll see this. And then later that week, it was on Netflix and out. And then I binged it in one night. It is the new, or it's not even, it is the Netflix original series, The End of the Effing World. It is a Channel 4 co-production. So if you're in England, you may have to watch this on your Channel 4 on demand. But it is about a couple, a high school couple, James and Alyssa. Alyssa is a very this Engadget article calls her salty, but she's a rebel. She's tired of cell phones and all of the fakeness of high school. And then James is a psychopath and wants to kill Alyssa. So they go on a road trip, and she's just trying to run away, and he's thinking, oh man, when am I going to kill this girl? The thing that surprised me the most is that it's a very easy watch. I ended up watching all 8 episodes in one night. They're less than a half hour. Most of them are 22 minutes.
Okay.
And the only thing that shocked me was that it wasn't just presented as a movie, because you could cut this down to be the size of a movie. I think if you like teenage coming of age movies, breaking out of your shell stories, as well as just like, you know, a police chase on the run sort of bandits sort of story. Excuse me. I think you might like this. The End of the Effing World. You may have to, if you're searching for it on Netflix, it may be listed FXXXING World.
It's weird because like all the trailers spell it F asterisk asterisk
right,
king.
But all the graphics world. Say FXXX ing.
Huh.
But it's pretty witty and surprising end to the series. So The End of the Effing World.
Awesome. So there.
Because like
good episode, guys.
Yeah.
Part of the
you
show.
You want to learn how to kill some? No.
Yeah.
It's a coming of age story, but it's really dark.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to see it. I'm glad to hear that you liked it, Bryce, because that makes me a little bit more intrigued and more interested than I was. But when I saw it, I was like, okay, well, that seems cool. And I saw Channel 4 and everything else, but that just sounds like it sounds up my alley as like, okay, this is the other side of that. I'm in already. Yeah. It's set in the UK, or is it like
it's set in the UK?
Okay,
and it really is such an easy watch. Like it was almost annoying how many times I had to be like, next episode, please, because it's really quick. I think if you're looking for something, it's very low risk, but high reward.
Right on.
If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Brian.
Yeah.
You have things to tell us.
Yeah, dude. No, as you guys know, we keep ourselves afloat with a bunch of different projects. Right now, I got a project. It's called constantly refreshing socialblade.com to figure out how long this run of new subscribers to the Modern Rogue is going to happen. I don't know what happened, but we just crossed over 500,000 subscribers. And we had a good 2 or 3 episodes in a row that were pretty good. The one that we just released on Friday is making secret storage compartments about how to make book safes or hide memory cards inside of a single coin and so on. But for whatever reason, just the floodgates are open and we're pulling in just a massive amount of subscribers. And from what I understand, YouTube has a system that pretty much the rich get richer. So now's a real good time for you to subscribe. If you've been on the fence, please subscribe right now to the Modern Rogue on YouTube.
Go make it happen, folks. And we will move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Another thing out of CES here, TCL announced its 6 series Roku TVs with the new Roku TV voice remote, 802.11ac Wi-Fi, Ethernet, and 3 HDMI 2.0a ports. There's also the 5 series that doesn't have the metal styling of the 6. TCL also announced the Roku Smart Soundbar, which will be paired to a TV or simply used as a standalone speaker. None of these are shocking surprises. We'd actually heard a little bit about them, but they're all officially announced now.
Meanwhile, at the Golden Globes, Amazon's Marvelous Mrs. Maisel won Best TV Musical or Comedy and Best Actress. Hulu's Handmaid's Tale won for Best TV Drama and Best Actress. HBO's Big Little Lies won Best Limited Series along with Best Actress, Best Actor, Supporting Actress. Netflix only won for Best Actor in a Musical Comedy with Aziz Ansari for Master of None. Would you call it a musical comedy?
A musical or comedy.
Musical or comedy.
Oh, there we go. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
It's always, yeah.
It's a comedy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get Out is neither musical nor comedy, but it was nominated in that category as well. So it's they play it fast and loose at the Golden Globes. But interesting to see Netflix, you know, they're enough of a veteran in this space that, like, we had a down year, only got one Golden Globe.
Yeah, well, and also, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in a place where they're not campaigning quite as hard. They're not making, you know, so-called Emmy bait stories or something.
Yeah. I still love that we now live in a world where Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon are actually getting Golden Globe-worthy series.
They're crushing it.
Like, it's amazing. It's so cool.
I mean, if you think about HBO now as sort of equivalent to this,
yep.
I mean, FX was pretty much the only other network that showed, the only network that showed up.
Yeah,
I know.
Wow.
Cable company Altice dropped Stars over carriage fees dispute and is directing its customers to sign up for Stars online service instead.
I love this so much.
Altice is replacing Stars with Hallmark Drama, Cowboy Channel, Sony Movies, and MGM HD. So in other words, I think you were paying less than you pay for Stars a la carte. And you'll still pay that, but you'll get these other channels instead. And Altice is like, man, if you want Stars, just go buy it from them. It's going to be more expensive. About 1 million Altice customers subscribed to Stars, according to Reuters.
Do you think Stars is happy with that outcome?
I mean, no.
No.
But yes, but no. I mean, they want a bigger cut from Altice than they were getting. And I guess if all 1 million went over and got it direct from Stars, they'd be super happy. But I doubt that that will happen.
Yeah,
that's sort of what I thought, too, is that like with the million, like with a station, you're guaranteed a certain amount of income. You're guaranteed a certain amount of revenue. If it's sort of variable, leave it up to the user. It's like, well, whoever really, truly wants Stars, and therein lies the rub.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Amazon has dropped its $4.99 a month anime strike add-on channel and rolled the movies and shows into the general Amazon Prime service. Amazon also added the option to add CBS All Access to Amazon Prime for $9.99 a month commercial-free. The $5.99 a month version that includes commercials won't be available on Amazon for a few months. I gotta tell you, everything about this makes sense to me. It sounds to me, if I was gonna read the tea leaves on this, I'm gonna bet that they bought the rights to all this anime strike stuff. They said, let's take on Crunchyroll and do a $4.99 add-on, and that nobody did it, and they're like, well, crap, we've already bought it, might as well just throw it in there and make our main offering more appealing. And then on top of that, this might be, I don't think I will ever sign up for CBS All Access unless it is commercial free and through Amazon Prime, because they've made it so easy in the past to unsign up for stuff. You know, like twice I've signed up for Showtime or whatever, or Stars, and then both times removing it was a breeze.
Well, and I think that's what's really interesting about this is it shows that people will add on all day long to their Amazon subscription unless it's from Amazon. If it's a house channel, they're going to be like, hey, I'm already paying you. Why are you making me pay extra? Forget it.
I am really surprised Amazon didn't try to spin off Anime Strike as a separate thing. Because I was thinking in my head, like, the only two major, like, anime outlets when it comes to internet is Crunchyroll and Funimation. And they're both roughly... They both kind of were in cahoots, for lack of better words. They have like some deal where Funimation gets like the dubbing rights and Crunchyroll gets like the subbing rights for certain things. And I was thinking, like, there's no other really outlet for like specifically anime only. And while I know Amazon have a whole lot of, you know, licenses for a whole lot of things, I was like, wow, why would you add it on as a product for that? Like, why wouldn't you try to spin it off? But probably just, you know, they just have enough inventory, for lack of better words.
I just don't think they had enough interest. I think it's too niche, and I assume the inventory affected the
appeal. Well, because that's really the thing, is that it is niche, but I still think there's room for at least one more beyond Funimation and Crunchyroll. I don't know what you could add on per se, but
Netflix. Well, buying and making.
That's why that also adds into the mix too, and that's where it gets interesting. That's why I'm like, wow, really, there's only two, and it, you know, anyways.
Yeah. Sci-Fi has greenlit Night Flyers for production. This is based on the George R. R. Martin novella. Jodie Turner Smith, who was in the movie The Last Ship, will star as Melantha Geary with Gretchen Mol. You may remember her from Boardwalk Empire as Dr. Agatha Matheson. Ian Macken, David Odjula, Sam Strike, Maya Eshet, Angus Sampson, and Brian F. O'Byrne are also set to star. Show air will air on Sci-Fi in the United States and Netflix in the rest of the world.
You know, I'm surprised that this one hit first. And by the way, I guess I shouldn't, because I'm speculating wildly. But we had talked years ago about him doing something with the Wild Cards universe.
Which is still in development. It's still going to happen. It's just taking longer, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess this is a case where just you get a different team and they're more excited. They're moving faster and they're.
Well, and it's a novella. It does feed into a wider universe that they say they'll tap into. But maybe it gave them more flexibility because you weren't locked into as many different things.
Yeah, could be. Meanwhile, one thing that none of us watched is the movie Bright. It's a feature-length movie starring Will Smith that appeared on Netflix in December. The movie had a score of 28% on Rotten Tomatoes, a company that allegedly somebody involved with this program may be married to. But 88% of the general audience loved it, apparently. So Netflix has announced it will make a sequel. How bizarre. We're seeing the reverse.
I watched it, Brian.
Oh, you did?
I did. Eileen, my wife, who works for Fandango and Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, I'm glad
you
finally disclosed that, because otherwise that would have been.
Thank God. I know. I've been hiding it. We watched it, and we did not like it. We did not go rate it as part of the 88% of the general audience who said they liked it. But we liked the idea. So I think Netflix is onto something here, which is like, hey, okay, so we make a bad movie. Bunch of people watch it. That's fine. They keep watching Netflix. We'll make a better one next time, and I will watch the next one.
I still need to watch Bright. Much like you, I'm intrigued by the idea. You know, sci-fi, fantasy, magic. You know, it's basically, you know, it's everything I kind of want. But
it's also like the framework of Alien Nation. You know,
well, it's the framework of also of every. You know, I forgot. I'm blanking on the tabletop RPG that is the framework
Shadowrun.
Of Shadowrun. Thank you. I was blanking on it.
It's Elfpunk. There's a genre for it. Yeah.
But you know, when it all boils down to it, if this doesn't show at the end of the day that really it is about who watches something, how many people watch something, and whether or not you know you're keeping eyeballs, even on Netflix, this is the sign. It's like, oh look, audiences all watched it, but the critics hated it. It doesn't matter. It got the numbers it needed.
Yep.
All right, let's get to the dispatches from the front. David Waco said, I thought I'd add a few thoughts from one of your old guys listening to the show since the beginning of Frame Rate. I wanted to add a few thoughts about subscription fatigue syndrome. He calls it SFS. Do you suffer from SFS? Though I am sure I could afford most of the services out there now, I know that I will not subscribe to much more than Netflix, and unless Amazon screws up really badly, I will always have Prime for all of its benefits besides just the streaming service. I doubt I would subscribe to the upcoming Disney service, and I might miss out on a few Marvel movies, but it would be only a small loss to me. I will never use any Apple service because I have an extreme distaste for everything that company taints. He used that word. Hulu lost me as a possible customer years ago with their brilliant pay for the right to watch commercial plan. He calls it the pay for the right to watch commercial plan that they still have. But you can get a commercial free plan now. That doesn't matter. He will not forgive them. CBS All Access may be the only way to watch Star Trek Discovery. But since that is the only thing there I might be remotely interested in, it is massively overpriced to me. And that pretty much nails down my fatigue problem. Too much money for too few shows spread across too many services. I think I will keep watching what comes to Netflix and Amazon a year or more after they run their course on some other service. And if they don't show up there, I'll never know what I missed and will feel much less fatigued. Hope you guys have a greatly successful new year. One of your still too few bosses, Dave in Waco.
Dave?
I read this, Brian, and my interpretation was like, hey, I pay for the things that are worth it to me. And I think that's great.
Sure, but also I do feel like he's got this sort of 1990s style mindset where it's like once you subscribe to a thing, you have it forever and you will always be paying that for it. Whereas nowadays, like, no, of course CBS All Access is overpriced for you on an ongoing basis. You won't do that. Instead, what will happen is next year you'll be hearing more buzz about Star Trek Discovery. You will spend $5 and in 1 month you will watch an entire 2 seasons worth. Then you'll cancel it and you'll say, that was $5 well spent. And then
if he's going to spend it at all, he'll spend $10 because he ain't paying to watch commercials.
Sure, that's great. $10, still a value, right?
$5. I know David Waco. I know he will not pay for doing commercials.
But I think we really are in this place where we just we're not quite ready to let go of the old ways that we were thinking about all these things.
I mean, yeah. I just recently switched my streaming like TV provider. Like instantly and without even thinking about it, just because it's cheaper on one of the other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've even thought about getting like CBS All Access just to check out Discovery as well. And just like if I don't like it, cool, cancel it in the week or you know just use the free trial.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I don't agree with that. I don't have too much subscription fatigue. I mean, for me, it's more if it's not here, cool. Let me check if it's here. All right, if it's not here, all right, fine. I mean, if I can't find it for sure, I'm gonna give up watching unless I really really want to. Then I'll buy it on Amazon or something.
Not
else.
Everyone suffers from SFS.
No. what are the side effects for the cure?
Michael from Omaha writes us to tell us about SyncLounge.tv. That's S-Y-N-C, Lounge.tv. He said he thought we'd enjoy this. It's a new, to him at least, piece of software from Plex Labs, also new, for watching shows synchronized with your friends. I haven't tried it yet, but it's from Plex Labs, and it's a place for third-party apps for passion projects. We've talked about this idea once or twice before, and I've lamented the fact that it's so challenging to synchronize and sort of host a watch party, and we've seen other offerings, but this one seems like a pretty good one.
Yeah, Plex does great stuff. Plex Amp is another one.
Yeah. We're in the middle of a hiccup period.
And there's also Rabbit, which I know a bunch of people use. Which,
that's right.
It like gives you like a fake virtual machine looking sort of thing, or just like a browser. It gives you a Chrome browser that you can log into stuff, and you all share the same video. How legal is it?
I really wanted to try one of these like shared experience services. Cause I know there's that one, and I know there's like the what is it? There's a Chrome plugin, right? That like lets you sync Netflix across people.
Yeah. I think we might have talked about it on that Modern Rogue episode.
Because I've wanted to try this so badly, just to especially with friends. I'm like, hey, we should all watch this. Like there's certain movies that are starting to come on now. Like really bad movies are starting to come on like your various services.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm like, yeah, I'd love to watch
that for the laugh. Yeah, with someone else.
Watch like Samurai Cop finally with like a bunch of friends or something like that. But it's definitely. I'm going to try Plex.
Tom has turned female, British, and recorded.
Thank you, Tom.
Meanwhile, Rob Lammers writes in saying, this has come up on the show before, but he says his wife can't tell the difference between HD, 4K, or HDR. That said, they were in Target, not even looking at TVs, when she saw an OLED TV and stopped dead in her tracks. Long story short, I know what I'm getting for next Christmas. Yeah, it really is weird. There's something about, those OLED displays really do
pop. OLED is gorgeous. It's expensive, but it's gorgeous.
We also last month we had an email from Sean who gave us a warning about getting double billed from MoviePass. He sent a follow-up saying that he got an email that was a blanket blast. He said lots of people got double or wrongly billed. Hopefully it works out. He says he's loving MoviePass and will probably see all the Best Picture nominated movies this year. I may actually watch an award show over antenna TV because I'm more invested. That's fantastic. What a wonderful side effect.
I've thought about signing up for MoviePass when I saw that the Alamo Draft House was one of the theaters on there.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll bet. And finally, John writes, Tom and Brian, thanks for all you do. Since I moved into an apartment with a community antenna in 1990, I've never paid for cable TV.
What?
Thanks for all the entertainment and information along the way. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thank you so much, John. If you want to get word to us, write us directly at cordkillers@gmail.com, and we'll do our best to read it right here on the air.
And we're live on DiamondClub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll cut your cords again next week.
Yes.
Also,
consensually.
Goodbye to Roberto Villegas.
Hi, bye. If you want to find me, it's okay. It's cool. Don't worry. You could just skip over me and we could just sail off into the sunset.
Vincent404 on Twitter.
Bye.
Cosmic Radio TV. Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and
you know, pledging them out. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.